Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Pancreatic Cancer Podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to cut to the truth about pancreatic cancer and other complex problems, to inject a burst of creativity into the field, and to provide a steady stream of hope to those affected by this terrible disease. I'm your co-host, Jordan Winter. I'm a pancreatic surgeon and a pancreatic cancer scientist at University Hospital, Siteman Cancer Center, and the Case Comprehensive Cancer Center in Cleveland. I'm here with my good friend and colleague, Jonathan Brody.
Thank you, Jordan. I'm Jonathan Brody, and I'm a researcher at Oregon Health and Science University. I'm a member and associate director of the Brendan Colson Center for Pancreatic Care, and I'm a vice chair of research in the Department of Surgery here. I'm part of the Knight Cancer Institute, and my lab focuses primarily on pancreatic cancer. Today's a really a great day for our podcast for a few reasons. One, I want to mention that to our listeners, I think we're approaching close to maybe 2,000 downloads, and so we hope to hit over 10,000 soon. We had a great podcast last week with the leaders of Pancreatic Cancer Action Network. And one little housekeeping note that I've been, Jordan, I haven't really I've been remiss in mentioning is that both are, because some people have asked me, the lead in, the intro, and then our lead out is actually courtesy of a radiation oncologist who we met and we knew it from our days at Johns Hopkins, Mike Schwartz, where I'm actually playing drums. And that's the name of the band was the Tom Kelly Band, named after a famous molecular biologist at Johns Hopkins, just as a brief note there. So Jordan, why don't you, I think it's probably more appropriate if you, I'll ask the first question, but you should probably give a brief introduction of our honored guest today.
So today, Jonathan is our first guest, I believe, who is an actual patient with pancreatic cancer. And this has been a show that you and I have really been eager to have since we started this. Because when it comes down to it, it's all about the patients. And Chris Joseph is our guest. And Chris and I connected actually through a really interesting story, which I think is a great lead in, John. A resident who I work with at University Hospitals is trying to put together a series of patients around the country who have been exceptional responders to immunotherapy with pancreas cancer. And as people who follow this story know, pancreatic cancer is considered a cold tumor, in contrast to, say, melanoma, which is a hot tumor, hot with respect to immune activity. And there's been a perception and a perspective and an experience, quite frankly, that pancreatic cancer does not respond to immunotherapy. But when we were at Thomas Jefferson, John, a few years back, I had a patient who was an exceptional responder. And maybe later in this podcast, I'll tell a little story about this patient. But he was the impetus of us trying to figure out, are there others out there? There aren't a lot. There've been a lot of negative studies, but if there's a negative study where only 3 out of 30 people respond, that means 3 people did respond. And we're trying to figure out who those 3 people are. And through a mutual contact between Chris and I was connected to Chris saying, there was an exceptional responder out in California and I want to introduce you to him. And sure enough, Chris is a patient in our study. We haven't published it yet. We're collecting the data. And I don't think Chris will mind me revealing that because he's written a book about it. So Chris Joseph is our guest. And Chris, it's really a pleasure and a privilege for us to have you on today.
Yeah, Chris, and I'll let you speak in a second. I'll just, because I'll lead you in. you know, just by way of extending that introduction and making it into a question, I think it might be nice, as you say hello to everyone out in podcast land, why don't you tell everyone your story? And, you know, from the point of when you were diagnosed, you know, the point that you actually, you know, what brought you to see a physician, and just basically your journey. So welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's really an honor. So my story starts in October of 2016, almost 4 years ago. I was having some abdominal discomfort, but no pain. I'd actually had some depression a couple months prior to that, but I didn't connect those dots that depression could be related to pancreatic cancer. Anyway, one thing led to another. I went in for a scan in late October, and I was shocked to get a diagnosis of third stage pancreatic cancer. Shocked, scared, petrified, actually. I went to see an oncologist here in Los Angeles. They wanted me to immediately start on chemotherapy, and I can't remember the formula that my doctor used. It seems like doctors use different drugs, but it didn't work. My tumor was getting larger after about 4 months. I was retested. My tumor was getting larger. The chemotherapy was really, really damaging my system. At that point, I hadn't been diagnosed with I didn't know that what I found out later, which was a genetic test, showed that I actually had a rare form of pancreatic cancer, not the garden variety adenocarcinoma, if that's how you pronounce it. I have what's called, and you guys will be able to explain this far better than I can, MSI, microsatellite instability, I think. And so I was not a good candidate for chemotherapy. Let me see if I can wrap this up. One thing led to another. I decided to quit chemotherapy. I had no plan B. This was in March of 2017, but I didn't want to die from chemotherapy. And I went on two different paths, which were complementary, as it turned out. I went on a path of both. I call them both immunotherapy, alternative immunotherapy. That I did here in Los Angeles and also in Germany, and then also Western medicine immunotherapy, Keytruda. And I think the combination of both led me to where I am today. I'm 4 years into my journey, and I'm doing great.
Well, let me just clarify, Jordan, help me clarify here. So he, from what I'm gathering, he actually did have had pancreatic cancer. He had what we call adenocarcinoma, but you had a very, it's very rare genetic, I would say genotype or phenotype of the disease with this MSI genotype, correct? Am I wrong? Okay.
Yeah. So this is adenocarcinoma and it is conventional, but it has a rare genetic underlying profile where the DNA actually looks a little bit different. There's a normal complement of DNA typically, as opposed to chromosome instability, which Scott Kern talked about in, I think, our first podcast. And there's a lot of mutations in this type of tumor. And it is believed that the high mutation burden creates this high quantity of neoantigens that may be recognized by the immune system. Of course, they weren't recognized by your immune system, Chris, initially because you presented with stage three and then started to progress, but your immune system could be switched on. And that isn't the case for all patients with MSI high or microsatellite instability high pancreas cancer. In fact, the majority, I think, look like they're not responding, but a higher proportion of patients with your tumor type do respond to immunotherapy than the 99% of other pancreas cancers. And, you know, tell us a little bit about that sequence, how you ended up on an immunotherapy.
As I said, when I quit chemo, I was just searching for alternatives at that point. I reached out to a doctor here. They started me on some non-traditional things, vitamin C, ozone, mistletoe, a lot of things that aren't actually, I think, even permitted here in the U.S. I also went to Germany and did some more things there, dendritic stem cell therapy, hyperthermia, and some of the same infusions I was getting here. But right before I left for Germany, I got a call. Well, let me back up. My regular doctor here in Los Angeles had the presence of mind to send my biopsy to Caris Lab on the East Coast. And Caris saw what they saw, which is that I had MSI, and immediately contacted Johns Hopkins. Johns Hopkins reached out to me 2 days before I left for Germany in April of 2017 and said, hey, you're good candidate for what was then a clinical trial of Keytruda. I told him I'd be happy to do it, but I was leaving and I, you know, could I do it in May or June when I came back? Went to Germany, did my thing there, came back, and I think, I can't remember the exact dates, but in May or June of 2017, Keytruda was actually approved by the FDA for my type of cancer. So I didn't have to go to Johns Hopkins, or I think they were running the other trial in Stanford. I could go to any oncologist here in Los Angeles. I found a doctor here in LA who was willing to administer Keytruda for my type of cancer. And I did a 2-year program starting in June of 2017. And I finished last summer.
And what happened to your tumor and what happened to your tumor marker? Do you know any of that information?
Yes. So, my tumor is been reduced by about a third. It has not spread. It has not, obviously, it has shrunk. The oncologist thinks what is remaining could be dead tissue, but he's not 100% sure of that. My tumor markers are really, really low and have been for a while now. I just had blood work done a couple weeks ago, and again, I'm speaking as a layperson. You guys can interpret this much better than I can, but I think their numbers are under 1 for my tumor markers.
Were they higher initially?
When I first started 4 years ago, yeah. But in the last couple of years, they've been really low. So the oncologist that I've used, he's thrilled with the results that I've been having.
So Chris, you know, take us back, because I, you know, you've known Jordan. We met a few minutes before we started recording the podcast, and you know, you come across as just a very charismatic, you know, likable guy. You have great energy. I can tell just in our short conversation, you got a real zeal for life. What was it like, if you can go back, if you don't mind for us and for our listeners, going back and actually hearing the news that you were diagnosed with this? What were your thoughts?
It's still hard to talk about.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. I don't mind answering. I just tell you, I get choked up sometimes. It was the most difficult day of my life when I got diagnosed. It truly scared the crap out of me. I wasn't married. My ex-wife was out of the country, actually. I had my kids at home. It was Halloween day of 2016. I got this news. Let me back up a little bit. I went to get the scans. I was supposed to get 2 scans. After the first one, they made me wait, and that's never a good sign. And then the clerk at the front desk said, well, we want to run some tests that your doctor didn't order. And that was also not a good sign and scared me. We ran the additional tests. The radiologist came in, just radiologist to me. He said, you have a mass in your pancreas. And that's, you know, that's horrible news. Horrible, horrible, horrible. I was by myself. I thought I was going in for routine tests, and I came out with that horrific news. So the rest of that day was spent crying and being in fear and telling my kids and telling my girlfriend and telling my ex-wife and that was the start of the journey. Horrible.
Well, I appreciate you, first of all, being very open, because I think that actually helps a lot of people who are listeners. On the flip side, now, you know, I can tell you look great.
Thank you.
Seems like that zeal for life continues. And I hope to, we'll hopefully see you in Portland and, you know, meet up for a meal after all this COVID stuff is happening. But, you know, the question is now, right, you're 4 years out, and obviously Jordan's line of questioning, and you know that not just with MSI, but also with the treatment, that you're doing very well, right? I mean, how do you feel that way? Yeah.
I'm doing great. I feel like I'm in best shape I've been in many years. I work out a couple hours a day. Doing Pilates, yoga, walking, getting in a pool, working full time, still parenting. My kids are still in high school. Still trying to be a good boyfriend to my girlfriend. Yeah, I'm living my life. I'm traveling even during the pandemic.
I heard you wrote a book.
I did. Yeah, it's coming out on September 15th. Called Life is a Ride.
And what motivated you to write that?
You guys know that screenwriters here in LA and elsewhere, they use pancreatic cancer as a vehicle to write out characters when they want a character to die or an actor wants to leave the show.
I've actually noticed that. Yeah.
It's one of that, and I think breast cancer are the two go-tos for writing a character. And obviously pancreatic cancer has a reputation for being tough to survive. So after I was about a year into my journey, when I realized, hey, I'm still here and I'm doing pretty well, I started getting lots of calls from people who, I was blogging about it. And so people knew my story. People who were reading the blog would tell their friends. And I started getting calls from either other pancreatic cancer patients, even other kinds of cancer. Either the cancer patients themselves would reach out to me or their friends or loved ones. And I would never give advice. That's not what I do. I'm not in the medical field. But I would tell my story. And I realized, it took me a while to realize this, but what they wanted, I'm not even sure they were interested in my story, although I guess they were, but they wanted hope. They wanted hope, and my story provided hope. So I'm going to answer your question now. So after doing this dozens and dozens and dozens of time, and I always liked doing it, but I realized, well, this is a good story. I should write it down. So in March, just when the pandemic hit, I had some blogs, so I had some material that I could go back and start from. But I wrote the book in about 4 months, getting published in a couple weeks.
And what's the title again? So we can give it another plug.
Thank you. It's called Life is a Ride, My Unconventional Journey of Cancer Recovery.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to getting that book, Chris. You know, and I want to go back to your response to John's question about what you were thinking. Because to me, I mean, that was just an important moment. And, we've had scientists on the show, we've had clinicians on the show. John and I, you know, are very clinical in how we talk about this disease, and we're scientists and we're very technical in terms of how we think about the biology. But what we try and take breaks and pauses and discuss with the people in our labs is this, there's a person at the end of this. And when every single patient who finds out that they have that diagnosis of pancreas cancer for the first time, they have a reaction that is similar to the one that you had. And And it's something that I can never forget, that we have to never forget. And that has to be the motivation for what we do. So, you know, I think it's just important for us to highlight that this really is what it's about. I want to ask you, Chris, you've been through now an incredible journey with so many different touch points with the medical community, different doctors, nurses, you know, a lot of people who are doing heroic work. Sometimes we're good at what we do. Sometimes we make mistakes. I want to ask you, what can we do better? What has been the take home from your standpoint as a patient that, you know, maybe what are we getting right and what are we not getting right from how we approach people like you who are dealing with this?
I think even asking the question that you're asking me means you're getting it right by being curious, by being open, because none of us know everything. I think, you know, I probably have, that's my general answer. I think I'll just speak for myself, but when a patient hears this kind of news, it is terrifying. And we don't know what the experts know. We don't, you know, when I first heard the news, I thought I was going to be dead in 3 months. I really did. I figured, oh shit, pancreatic cancer, I'm done. So I didn't really get this from my first oncologist, but I have gotten it from my second oncologist and from others who I've spoken with. I've really only had a couple bad experiences and mostly really great experiences, which I'm happy about. The first oncologist really wasn't willing to sit down and talk with me and listen and answer questions and explain things, give me options. I will say, though, I think it was my responsibility to ask more, questions. I think it was my responsibility to get second opinions and third opinions. But at the time, I was so scared that I didn't know that I should have done that. I think what I love about the medical community is I think doctors really want to do the right thing. I really think they do. And I think most of them do. I think that, I'm sort of meandering here, but the other thing I can remember that my first oncologist never talked to me about was how to keep myself healthy during chemotherapy. And I would try to keep myself healthy anyway, but chemotherapy is tough on your body. And he and I never talked about nutrition or diet or anything like that. I think that would have helped a lot. But again, I don't want to put the blame on him. It's also, I do think it was my responsibility to press that. And that's one of the things I tell people in my book that, you know, Here are the things I didn't do. So you might want to learn from my mistakes. I don't want to put this all on the medical community.
Now, every patient is different. So you're not going to speak for every patient, only speaking for yourself. But from your perspective, how do you want to be spoken to by a physician? Obviously, you want a physician who's going to listen to you. And you just mentioned that, someone who's going to listen well. But in terms of talking about the disease, you know, this is something that is a challenge every time I have a conversation with a patient, recognizing the importance of both being realistic, but also optimistic in the same conversation, which really requires, a fair amount of skill and attention. And I want to know from your vantage point, what are you looking for in that conversation?
I think honesty, integrity, speaking from the heart. I think, you know, recognizing that when a patient hears this news, they may not even be listening. I know I had that trouble at first. When the radiologist said, you have a mass in your pancreas, I'm not even sure I heard whatever followed after that. So I think time, you know, just having some time with whoever you're talking to in the medical community really, really can help. Empathy, and what you talked about a few minutes ago, that when a doctor tells me that they don't know everything, that actually makes me like them even more. It really does. Makes me respect them even more.
So, I mean, along those lines, you know, two things that I'm sort of thinking about. One is outside the medical community. So what do you, I mean, look, we had, you know, we had Pancreatic Cancer Action Network on, and we know they're great, but just the community in general, as well as just the support. I mean, look, I think in this day and age, as we know, there's so many issues that need attention. And if you're involved in those issues, you know, we're all thinking that this issue is the most important, but obviously when you're diagnosed with something like cancer or pancreatic cancer, you're realizing like, why isn't there more put into this? Or is the infrastructure there? Is the support there? So outside your, you know, visits to the hospital and your physicians and what Jordan was talking about, do you think that, I mean, obviously you're helping out here by writing this book and telling your story here, and that helps a lot. We need more people like you are being brave. But did you think the support was there? I mean, if you can try to wean out your own sort of friendship and community, you know, setting, but just the larger pancreatic community, what's been the response?
You mean in terms of people who are in the field of pancreatic cancer?
Across the board. I mean, I just think, you know, it sounds like you got a lot of interactions with people with your blogs and other things. Did that make you feel less alone? Did you feel more supportive? Was that real to you, you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yes, it was real. I made the decision almost instantly to not keep it a secret. And I just wanted to go public with, you know, oh God, I have this nasty form of cancer. I don't judge other people for wanting to keep it more private. It was just not the path I chose. It turned out to be a great decision for me, because when I started writing the blog, I felt less alone. I was getting really good feedback. I realized, not that I didn't know it before, but I really learned it firsthand how cancer touches every family. And so I would get a lot of sympathy and empathy and good vibes and prayers and thoughts. And I do think that helped. Yeah.
And Chris, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording. You know, obviously, like Jordan said, we're both scientists and you know, I'm sure you also got a lot of recommendations from people of you should do this or take that and do this. And you said, you know, you admittedly said to me, you said, look, I'm a hybrid. I believe in sort of Western Eastern medicine. Can you give us your sort of philosophy on that and how that has affected your journey and, you know, what makes you believe in something versus not? And, you know, are you someone who said, you know, hey, I'll give this a shot. And how much you think that's actually allowed you to be where you are today?
Just so you know, my philosophy is evolving. Perhaps I can use COVID as an example, and then we can weave back into pancreatic cancer. I look, you know, what's going on now is a tragedy with COVID, and you know, I'm all for whatever scientists in the medical community can come up with, whether it's a treatment options, vaccines. I'm not a person that likes waiting. And I think if I had waited on my pancreatic cancer journey, I might not be here talking to you now. So I like taking action. The action I can take during COVID is certainly to be careful and to wear a mask and to be respectful. But I can also try and get in better shape, and I can try and eat healthy and keep my immune system as strong as it can be. And I think that's sort of my philosophy. Been my evolving philosophy with dealing with cancer, that there are things that the medical community can help me with, and they did. And what can I do? So, I mean, I suppose it's sort of a hybrid of alternative, Eastern, Western, and then also personal.
Well, Chris, that's Chris. I think, you know, I never heard anyone actually say it like that, but I think it's a great point you bring up that we, you know, especially Jordan and I on this sort of this side of the table is, you know, there's always a lot of pressure about, you know, in discussion of bedside manner and what's the best therapy. And obviously people, there's a lot of families who are angry when they're diagnosed and, you know, the outcomes that come out. And they get upset with their surgeon and et cetera. But it's an interesting point of sort of like the dual ownership, right? There's the ownership of the physician, but then there's the ownership of the patient of following through and doing what you can do best. And I think that was really well said. You know, I think that's really well said about, you know, even COVID. It's like we can blame the government and the medical community for not coming up with, you know, a vaccine fast enough. But in the meantime, there has to be some ownership, right? I mean, we have to.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I agree. I really picked up on that that perspective that you offered, because really one of the most important predictors of success with this disease, when you look at people at various stages of the disease, is the patients that are the most fit, that are in the best shape, both mind and body, are the ones that do the best, irrespective of whether they're actually responding radiographically to their chemotherapy. So there are things that are in your control. The things that you are doing are helping you tremendously. You know, sleeping well, eating well, exercising, and anything else that you can do to take care of yourself is actually going to help you fight the cancer. There's no question. And you know, we're actually very interested in our lab in studying diet and how that can impact the efficacy of different treatments on pancreatic cancer. So I think that there's a tremendous amount there.
I can also tell you that I spent, especially early on when I wasn't sure if I was going to survive, I spent many a day laying around in my bed, and that actually made things worse because I was thinking too much. The fear was escalating. I would get lost in my own thoughts, and I had people urging me to get up, and but I also did it myself. And once I would get up and become engaged in life again, whether it was my work, my family, getting outside, connecting with people, I could see the difference in my mental attitude and my emotional attitude. And I have to believe that helped me with my physical condition too.
Chris, are you still on Keytruda, or how long were you on that medicine for?
No, I was on it for 2 years and it ended May of 2019. So I've been off it for about, what is that, about 15 months,
I guess. Are you off of all treatment right now?
Yeah, I still, yes. I mean, I still take some supplements.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, you know, I think you talked about hope, and, you know, I really also believe that there's a tremendous amount of hope in this field right now. We just published online a paper where we surveyed the pancreatic cancer trial landscape, and that's something that we can talk about in a future episode. But the short of it is that there's 450 ongoing trials in this country right now. And about two-thirds of them are studying or testing novel therapy. So I think that there's a good chance, a high chance, that there's a treatment in trial right now that is ultimately going to progress through trials and become a standard agent that's going to significantly impact patients with this disease. I think that we're living in a very exciting time, and I think that if the more we can get patients to hang in there, the more opportunities there will be to get on new investigative agents, of which some of them may have an impact, and I'm very optimistic about that.
Yeah, that's great. And And Chris, sort of to wrap up here, let's just say when this podcast goes online, put yourself in the shoes of someone who maybe the day before this goes online, they got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and they Google and they come across this podcast. What message do you have to someone who on basically day one gets this diagnosis? What would you go back and tell yourself when you found out, or what would you tell that person who might be listening right now?
Wow, fantastic question. I'm not sure if I have a good answer for that, but I would, if I had to go back, I would tell myself to breathe. I would, some of the things I did, I'm really happy I did. I'm really happy that I showed my feelings about it instantly to everyone. I would ask questions. I would talk to as many experts as I could. I would surround myself with people I love. I'm not sure if that's answering your question directly, but it's a great question, and it's such a tough time for people who find out that news. Really, really tough.
Well, I think you're, a great example of someone who is an advocate for not just the community, but for themselves, and, really kind of lives that and sort of takes ownership of who they are. And part of doing that is always being self-reflective. And I appreciate that. And from my point of view, for what you went through, you're someone I really admire. And I feel like we became friends through this podcast. So great to first meet you, and look forward to continue our relationship. Jordan, I'll let you wrap up here.
Well, I want to thank Chris for joining. I agree. I think that we've established a friendship. This is the second time I've had a conversation with Chris. I know we're going to have many more. Love to have you back on the show in the future. And I think you exemplify why I continue to feel like our patients really are the heroes. What you go through in terms of the challenge and the challenges you face and the courage that you have to muster in order to face those challenges are truly remarkable. And through all of that, to have the interest and the desire to help others by spreading this message of hope and of trying to communicate your experience with the intent to help somebody else, I think is not unique in this community. It's something that we see over and over and over again. And I find it inspiring. And, Jonathan, I'm ready to get into the lab and try and find that cure for all of you.
Yeah. And Chris, why don't you end with, give people some details when they want to hear more about the story. Where can they find the book? Again, the title, et cetera.
So the title of the book is Life is a Ride, My Unconventional Journey of Cancer Recovery. It'll be on Amazon and iBooks, Barnes & Noble, all the platforms as of September 15th. If I could say one last thing on this end, I don't use this word in a religious standpoint, but I had some angels helping me. I had some people who reached out to me, people who had been through cancer and who had survived. And they told me early on that if I could make it through this, that I would pay it forward. And that's what I feel like I'm doing now, that I'm paying it forward to try and help other people.
Absolutely. And I will say, just in full disclosure, I had no idea. I knew about you. I had no idea about this book. Till the podcast began. So this was not at all trying to be a promotion towards the book, but it sounds to me like this book can help out a lot of people. And I can't wait to read it. In fact, I might be so bold, Chris, I'd have your email. I might want a signed copy for my office. So
thank you.
Thanks, I might hold you to that. Maybe one for Jordan too.
I will definitely send you guys copies.
Good. Okay. With that, thanks. That's another episode. Thanks again for being here, Chris. Thank you, Jordan.
Thank you.
Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
Guys, stay safe.